On today's episode, we have Sam Norris from Grand Union Finance and the top podcast, it's in the top 100, may I add, of the Game of Loans podcast. So make sure you go and check it out. We're going to be covering everything from, obviously we're in a recession now, as you guys know, his favourite lender to work with, any hot tops and tips that he's going to touch on, and trust me, there's a lot of them. So Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Mate, I'm so happy to be here, finally, in this room. I've seen everyone else be on it, and I'm like, I've got FOMO. I wanted to be on.
Well, let's see if you say that at the end. So, as everyone knows, I like to start at the very beginning. So, take me back to what it was like in your early years.
Yeah. So, in terms of pre-work, are we talking? Pre-work. We're going really far back.
Yeah, fine. I'm fascinated. I always ask. People probably get bored. That's why I haven't got many subscribers. But I'm fascinated in as what shapes you. What shaped you into the person you are today?
Yeah. Well, do you know, so I'm an only child. Okay. Which, given that I can talk for Britain, isn't—I'm sure—not surprising to a lot of people. When I was a kid, I grew up with my mum and my stepdad, actually, because my real dad left really, really early on in my life. Like, really didn't get to know him very much. So, because my mum then had to work, I was left with my grandparents. I was left to my own devices from a really young age, and I think that shaped me massively. Because I think, as an only child, you are either really desperate for attention all the time and you're kind of spoiled, I think, or you are just really comfortable in your own environment and you just get on with things. And actually, the thing that was difficult for me early on in my life was actually playing with others. I was quite happy just doing everything on my own. I didn't really want to be part of teams. I'd rather play sports that were just me on my own. And I think what that was is because actually I was in control of my own destiny then. I wasn't reliant on others, people doing a decent job as well. Yeah. And over time, I had to sort of change that mentality a little bit. I started playing rugby at a really early age. My stepdad, who I'll refer to as my dad from now on because he is. Yeah. Big rugby boy. And obviously, I got into that at a very early age. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled like being part of a team. I just wanted to do everything. I mean, I've captained every rugby team I've ever played in. I've always been like the equivalent of like a centre midfielder from a footballing perspective, playing rugby, always calling the shots. So maybe that harks back to that being in control of things scenario. That was me early doors, was only child Sam, left to his own devices, just had to get on with stuff. And I didn't really have much of a choice in that, to be honest.
You mentioned that your sort of dad left at an early age. How did you manage that and how did you cope with it?
Do you know what? It's when people talk to me about this, they're really shocked my reaction. I'm not bothered. It has had so little effect on me. I think it's because I know he wasn't the greatest of human beings. The only real major negative impact it's had on my life is that like I'm really similar to my mum in terms of the way we look, the way that we are kind of emotionally as individuals as well. And so it's very easy for me to know what character traits I have that are from my original, like from as one of my girlfriends once called him, the sperm donor. Some of them are quite negative. So I would always struggle with criticism as a kid, something that my mum doesn't struggle with. So I know where that came from. I've had to learn to deal with that in a more positive way. I was always quite lazy as a kid as well. And again, those traits used to be things that I used to hold up as real negatives about myself, when actually both of those things now I use as like superpowers in how I go about doing things now. The fact that I am lazy means that I'll go and find the easiest way of doing something, which is usually conducive to a better service to my clients and a better way of working and a better way of dealing with my staff. And the fact that I've learned to, instead of not find criticism difficult, instead I've actually found that I've started to embrace it. In fact, I surprised so many of my clients by giving them a call once we finished doing an application or something. I go out, right, I need you to list all the things we did really badly. And they're like, what? And I really pushed them on it, because I'm now almost obsessed with making sure that everything is as good as it can be. And even just a tiny little bit of constructive criticism that we can get from an existing client, it's worth its weight in gold.
Where does that come from? Because I get what you're saying, but people listening to this won't necessarily understand that you're trying to achieve a certain target or achieve like 100% every single time. So where does that come from?
Do you know what?
Trying to be the best all the time.
Actually, to be honest, this has probably come a little bit from my stepdad. As I said, I'll call him my dad from now on. So my dad in the local North London Barnet area where I grew up, he is like, the joke is we call him King of Barnet because everyone knows him. He's so popular. But our local pub that we go into, when he walks in, everyone wants to come and say hello to him. And everyone used to say to me, you know, your dad's a great guy. He's this, he's that. He was the best rugby player I ever played with. That was another thing I get all the time. And growing up, I think I just wanted to, because I knew that I didn't have his blood running through my veins, I felt maybe a bit inferior. And I felt like I had to live up to his expectations, which, you know, he seemed to just glide through life really easily. And I struggled. You know, for me to get good grades at school, for example, I had to work my ass off. It didn't come, nothing came, has come naturally to me, really. Even playing rugby, you know, I achieved some pretty decent things playing rugby as a kid. You know, I played in the Saracens Academy for a little while. I had to work seven times as hard as anyone else to get to that same level because I just wasn't naturally good at it. And I think that's what sort of drives me. Now I've got over those daddy issues of having to live up to his expectations, and actually I look at how he runs his business and I go, that's not how I'd run my business. So actually the sort of the God persona's gone a little bit. The crown's slipped, if you like. But I still just want to be the best. I really just want, the way I see it is, if you're not going to at least emulate or try and achieve, the best that there has been and then surpass it, then kind of what's the point?
And how do you get rid of them? Not so much daddy issues, but that, obviously you're trying to live up to his expectations. How do you sort of get rid of that for anyone listening? Because I know for a fact there's someone listening.
It was bloody hard, mate. It really was hard. Because the thing is, you know, when you do have parents, everyone's, you know, a lot of people have parents at some point. Obviously some lose them earlier than others, but you do, I think a lot of people do look up to their parents. A lot of people don't, but I think most people do. And you look at what they do, you know, back in the day, people used to just follow in the footsteps of either their mum or their dad, depending on if they're born a girl or a boy. And I think that's just become ingrained in our society that you kind of have to, your parents have set a bar and then it's your job to maybe surpass that. And I think because the bar was so high with my dad, that I just struggled with it so much growing up as a kid. And I actually had therapy when I was, it wasn't that long ago, it was about 3 years ago, because I was going through some stuff myself, and it sort of, through that, I was able to kind of really dig deep and try and figure out where some of these anxieties and stresses came from. And a lot of it was for the weight of expectation that I felt from the outside. And I think what I did then was I said, well, actually, wouldn't it be nicer if that expectation was my own? And I just sort of took ownership of the expectation instead. I didn't need somebody else to tell me that I was doing a good job anymore. I knew when I was doing a good job. Yeah, do you know what? It's great. And this is a funny thing, actually, talking about kind of work-related stuff. I get told all the time, because in our industry, you have to self-nominate for awards and stuff. Like, why does Grand Union never win an award? I'm like, because I never nominate us. Because I don't need that recognition right now. In the future, it'll form part of our marketing. But right now, I don't need it. All it is it's a waste of time, because that's time I could be talking to a client on the phone. I don't need that outside recognition that we've won an award that we've self-nominated ourselves for. Not bothered at all. I'd rather just do a really good job and have my clients on the way here today. We completed on a bridging loan for an HMO conversion today. Tempered. Yeah, yeah. Literally, he's shared it. And that means more to me than winning an award. Seeing somebody publicly want to say, you know, we've completed on this, thanks.
And it obviously goes back to the point of the lessons that you've learned in therapy. And I think it's very important for people. I say every single time that someone goes to therapy that, what type of therapy was it first?
It was for anger management.
Really?
Yeah. I know. Whenever I tell anyone, they're like, what?
No, it doesn't surprise me. But I thought it would have been a different one, if I'm honest. Well, obviously you told us some of the lessons that you've learned, but was there any more that you learned from that?
It was just to have a bit more control over myself. Because I think what happened was like I said, I played rugby for a long, long period of time. One of the reasons I think I didn't go pro, because I think I had the mental strength to go pro, was because I had a really bad injury when I was 18, standard. Mm. I dealt with that by just drinking loads for like a year after that. But rugby is a physical sport, and you perhaps don't realise how much of your stresses and strains of your daily life you are able to release by playing a game at the weekend, going to training, going to the gym hard and all that kind of stuff. And when that suddenly comes to an end, because it stopped, I broke my ankle. So it wasn't on my terms either. Which has always kind of annoyed me. And I always feel like I need to just play one more game of rugby just to say, right, I'm retiring now on my own terms.
Yeah.
But I suddenly didn't have that output to get rid of those stresses and strains. And I have a stressful job as well. I've got a lot of demands on my time. And a lot of people that have very high expectations of me as well, which are kind of, when you are relatively successful, you are kind of a victim of your own success, that people expect that high level 24/7. Yeah. And I think it just kind of got to me in the end. My wife at the time also struggled with sort of mental illness, I suppose you would call it. Her mental health was bad. She always had anxiety, and she couldn't be there for me. She just physically didn't have the capacity to do it. So I did feel really lonely, and I felt kind of lost in my own thoughts a lot of the time. And when you have a lot of things going through your head, which I do, which is I've always thought of it as a thing to struggle with, but I've done a lot of research, and apparently it's a trait that very successful people have, is they find it difficult to switch their brain off. So I'll take that as a win. It's so weird to describe to anyone. You just completely lose control of yourself.
I don't think it is weird at all. I can certainly relate to you, especially with rugby, especially with the anger management and the mental side of things. So again, I'll share my story with the rugby. Exactly the same with epilepsy and the arthritis. And again, I had the operation. But I would look for validation from the sideline, wouldn't necessarily get it, so I'd purposely pick someone out on the middle of the pitch and smash the living shit out of them.
I did used to do exactly the same thing.
And I still wouldn't get it. And I think, well, what's the point?
But do you know what's weird, right? So you'll get this now. So I'd imagine we played in pretty different positions, judging by our physical stature.
A prop.
You were a prop.
Prop and eight. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was a fly half. I was a pretty boy.
Yeah.
but I still, I would get more satisfaction over absolutely annihilating someone than scoring a try.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes you get a bigger cheer.
Yeah, of course you would.
Because you've just absolutely... Because it's such a boys' club, isn't it? Yeah. It's just such a... if you've never played the game, it's so difficult to describe, because from the outside looking in, it sounds horrendous. You talk about, right, so you spend, I'm sure it's exactly the same, you spent the entire time with your own teammates absolutely taking the piss out of each other to such an extent that most people would cry. That's how bad the banter would get. And then when you're on the pitch and you're all together, you then take that up to the next level with the people that are opposite you in a physical way, and you're just, all you're trying to do is, and the fingers that go in places they shouldn't do. And, one of my tricks was when I finished tackling, I finished my career playing rugby league as well. So I get on top of them. You've just completed a tackle. And as I get up, I give them a kiss on the forehead and a wink. And the amount of punches I used to get thrown at me as a result of that was my job. Wind up the opposition.
Yep.
To the point where one of them gets a yellow or a red, and then happy days, then we'll go on and win the game because we've got an extra player. That was my job. My job was to do that. It's horrendous when you think about it. So when you've got all of that going on, and you've got then the stresses and strains of normal life, but then all of that is removed, it escalated so quickly to the point where, it would happen once a month. I would just have like a bit of a loss of control. You'd almost have a fit. That's how angry I used to get. I've always been, because I don't think I'm an angry person. I don't get annoyed very easily. I genuinely am quite positive as a person. I've had partners in the past tell me how annoying it is that I'm really positive. What I would do is I'd kind of recognize that these problems were happening, and I'd try and take myself off and just, you know, calm myself down. But unfortunately, in certain instances, you can't, you physically can't do that because you're in a public place or you're surrounded by people. And that was what was difficult. But you learn to cope with it. You learn to recognise the signs. Absolutely. And put things in place to allow tools, you to exactly get back to normal again.
I can only obviously share from my own experiences. You've developed, again, coping mechanisms. You've got the tools that you can put in place. And being angry is not necessarily a bad thing because you're showing your emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you said earlier, you've got all these thoughts going around in your head. You're thinking, shit, what do I do now? I've got this going on. It's normal.
Mm-hmm.
That is normal. If you're performing at a high level all the time, you're being pulled from pillar to post because that happens with me now. I know it happens with yourself, with the industry that you're in. But now we've got tools in place. And if it gets too much, you're like, and breathe.
Do you know what's really funny, though, is it's almost gone the opposite direction for me. I find it quite difficult to get angry. Like, even if I kind of want
that's
to.
Age, mate, that is.
Yeah, maybe. But I've always said to people, I'll argue with people if I care about you, because I then care about your opinion, and I want you to agree with me because I value you as a human being.
Yeah.
If someone says something to me and I don't argue back, that's a really clear sign that I don't give a shit.
So my ex-wife said exactly the same about me. She goes, you know that he's got the hump with you when he ignores you.
Mm.
But apart from that, I don't get annoyed with you.
Yeah.
It's just, if I ignore you.
But in my office, I even get to the point now where some of the other guys are like, because they can sometimes hear some of the conversations, and they're like, how did you not rip that person's head off? You know, especially if you're speaking to an estate agent, they'd be really smarmy with you, or a solicitor. It's really difficult. But I was given some great advice years and years and years ago by a sales manager of mine, and she said to me, she went, ever you get into one of those situations, just kill them with kindness.
Yeah.
Just always take the high road with everything, because number one, if you really want to piss them off, that's the way to do it. Because if you're sometimes you're on the phone with someone, they just want an argument with you, and if you don't allow them to have that outlet, it just winds them off even more.
Yeah.
And it is a tactic, you know. At the end of the day, when I'm working, when I'm doing my job, my sole focus is the client. It's not to be friends with an agent or a solicitor. Yeah, do you know what? If we can, and that happens really regularly, I think I go above and beyond to be friends with agents and solicitors because, number one, why wouldn't you? You're all doing the same thing. Like, it's nice to chat to people. But secondly, there's a potential business partner there at some point. You know, if there's a solicitor that turns around and goes, you guys are great at this, well, guess what? They're going to introduce some of their clients to me. It's not rocket science, you know? But sometimes you just have people that, no matter what you do, no matter how good your work is. I had someone the other day, an agent. We're waiting for a damp and timber report to come through, but I've managed to negotiate with the bridging lender, start the legals early so that we can progress things. You know, doing him a favor. We're in no rush our end. His vendor's in a rush, so we've done it to help his client. And we've been told that the damp and timber survey is going to take between 7 and 10 days to get returned. And I've gone back to him and said, you know, look, in reality, it doesn't matter because we'll get our offer once that comes back. But in the meantime, we can do all this other stuff. And that's going to take longer than that anyway. So, you know, don't worry. Don't worry about it. And he came back. In my 21 years of working in this industry, I've never known a damp and timber survey take that long. And I was like, so hang on, has this just become a dick measuring competition? Because I really don't care. I just don't care. I'm going to do my job really well, regardless of how much pressure you put on me, how much you want to be an idiot, how much you want to, you know, play these stupid games. It really doesn't bother. All in my mind, and this is going to come across so big-headed, and I really don't mean it in this way. In my mind, I just think, well, you've just lost the opportunity to work with me and my company. And I believe that we do a good job. I believe in what we do. My team is amazing. I love them so much. And I'm so proud of what they do on a day-to-day basis. I watch them all doing their job, and honestly, like, the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up when I'm thinking about it. Like, they are insane. I just need more of them. That's all it is. And I just, you know, when that sort of thing comes through, I'm like, you've lost the privilege of getting your clients to work with us. He knows how good it is. He knows how good the team is because he's working with them on a day-to-day basis, and we're updating him so much more than any other broker would do. We're going above and beyond what other brokers would do to help his client. Our client doesn't has no timescales. In fact, it goes against what he wants because he hasn't got his build team ready. So to complete early actually does him out of money because he's going to have to start paying interest on that loan as soon as we complete. So we're all doing this for his client and he still couldn't see it. And like I said, I think that if I didn't have some of those controls over my emotions, that would really, really upset me. But I just go, like, this is your problem, bro.
So now tell me about Grand Union. Which I know you've just briefly touched on it there.
But yeah.
This has been going a while now.
2.5 years, which seems a long time and not a long time at the same time. We're up to 5 members of staff now, including myself. I could easily see us by the end of this year. We're recording this in February, probably by third quarter. I'd like to have maybe 1 or 2 more members of staff on board and probably maybe 3 by the end of the year. There is a possibility you might even look at buying another brokerage by the end of this year, just because why not just increase the number of people that we have by 10 instead of 1 at a time? You know, it's kind of my process. But it came about because I've been doing this job for 16 years. I've worked for some small brokerages, I've worked for some big brokerages, I've worked for some good ones, and I've worked for some bad ones. And the one sort of constant throughout that was that I am not a good employee. So I'd be successful in some places, less successful in other places. And I think what I started to learn was that as much as I think I'm a decent broker, actually it's a little bit like McDonald's, right? With any business, is everyone always takes the piss out of McDonald's because you get spotty teenagers working there. Whereas I see that as the most amazing thing in the world. You have one of the best businesses in the world practically being run by spotty teenagers. That means that the processes are as, if not maybe even more important than the staff you've got there. So the processes allow the staff to work at the height of their ability, probably even surpass what they thought their ability was. So then it all just comes down to, it's not necessarily skill, it's down to mindset and personality. And I often saw this in my industry whereby brokers are asked to do a lot of jobs that they shouldn't necessarily, don't necessarily really utilize their skill set. There's lots of admin, there's lots of compliance, there's lots of paperwork. Whereas I think to be a good broker, you're actually a good communicator and a good problem solver. If you look at personality tests, those different sort of skills do not overlap. So you're never going to have, if you have an all-rounder, they're going to be okay. Whereas I always saw that the things I was good at was I could get any client to want to work with me because I get just genuinely really excited about what they're doing. And when there's something that's difficult, I'm like, this is great. Let's try and figure this out. And let's jump on a Zoom call and go through loads of stuff. And I get really excited about it and sometimes waste time on dead ends just because the idea of solving a problem that no one else can really gets me going. But I'm rubbish at paperwork and follow up and all that kind of stuff. So I instantly thought, well, if I'm actually going to, I either change career and just do something different, or I utilize at the time, 14 odd years or so of working in this industry and go, actually, let's just do it. I'll just do it for myself. I'll do it the way I think it should be done. And I'll bring in the systems and processes in place to allow me to do my job to the best of my ability, then bring the best people I can find in that complement my skills with a completely different skill set. Mm-hmm. And that's how we built things up. I still speak to pretty much every client that comes through the front end at Grand Union because I want to get to know them. I want them to know that the way that I think things should be done is how the rest of the team work. You know, they are, as much as it sounds almost dictatorial, but they're working to how I think things should be done, and that's how I built the team out. So you know, there's hundreds of other brokers out there. And I just kind of thought, well, how can we be not only different, but better? And the way that I use it is, how can we actually create a genuine alternative to what else is out there? Because if people don't like what else is out there, there isn't really an alternative at the moment. So we wanted to just do things in a different way.
How have you been received by the other brokers?
Poorly. I need to learn to shut my mouth sometimes because I can be a little bit. I think there's a lot of arseholes in our community and our industry, and I have not necessarily always been the shyest in saying that, and I know some of them. I can picture them in my head. Like, I've worked with them.
That's why I asked the question, mate.
Yeah, I can literally see these people in my head because I've worked with them. I've heard the things they say on the phone, and then when the phone goes down, what they say afterwards. And do you know what? The most successful brokers from a financial perspective in my industry are not the people I want to emulate, because there's a reason why they're making more money. It's because the care and attention they put into their clients is not good enough. Mm. I think that you have to make a decision where I'm not greedy. In fact, it's only recently that I've discussed with my operations manager financial targets for the company. All of my targets, all of the things that I put in place with the team and I hold them to account over, is all customer relationship orientated. Because I just believe if you do that, the money will follow. But you know, it's giving clients the wrong advice, not necessarily the wrong advice, but maybe withholding a little bit, which pushes them a little bit down one road that will lead to them taking out a loan that will make that broker more money. And I'm kind of like, but that isn't, yeah, okay, if you have solved a problem, but you could have solved it differently and earned less money. But you know, the amount of times over the years that I've heard conversations with other brokers talking to bridging lenders and going, well, this bridging lender's paying me 2%, so I'm going to take the client there. It's like, what? No, if one's paying you 1% and one's paying you 2%, you just take the hit. It will come back around another time where you'll be doing another deal, and the best deal will be the one that pays you more. I don't even look at what they pay me. It doesn't even come into my thought process, and it's just stuff like that. That
it seems like a very cutthroat industry.
It is. I do think we're moving in the right direction. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like anything. You know, I do believe that on the whole, as much as there's lots of crap going on in the world, I do believe our world's getting better. I do. I have to, otherwise, like, what's the point, right? Yeah. But I do believe things are going in the right direction. People are less homophobic. People are less racist. We're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But as a human race, I do believe we're evolving in the right direction. And then when you take it down to the micro of my industry, I think it's the same thing as well. You know, it's an incredibly sexist industry. It's disgustingly sexist. In fact, there was a situation recently, and maybe I won't get invited back for saying this, but I'm actually not that bothered. There was an industry awards a couple of years ago where the next year they changed the layout of the awards to try and make it less likely that women were going to get like touched up and like sort of abused, basically, because it was like a full on all day event. They were ploughing the mainly old school male, people that were there with alcohol very, very early on. And there were so many complaints about guys being a bit too touchy-feely, you know, and they changed it to an evening event the following year and that was the reason behind it. And that's the kind of crap that I can't deal with. I even saw it at that same event this year. Luckily I was with a really good mate of mine, who, she is a bit of a boss and she will just stand up for herself. But even like, there was this old guy and he was like touching her back, and I was like, oh mate, hang on, 1951's on the phone to you. I don't know if you want to take it or you want me to send it to answer machine. I just can't deal with it. I just get so angry. I get embarrassed. Like, sometimes, like, as men, like, I just get embarrassed by stuff like that. I'm like, why are you because then we all get tarnished with the same brush, and we're not what we're like. I think most men are not like that. Yeah, so that was a massive tangent, wasn't it?
Listen, mate, that's what it's here for. But what opportunities do you see coming from this current state of the economy that we're in? Obviously, I know you spoke about this on your social media.
Yeah,
but I think it's important.
With every adversity, there's opportunity. I use that phrase a lot. And I think, you know, we've been at events together where we've seen people talking about the opportunities that lie in wait over the next, you know, the next few months, the next 2 years potentially. I just think that people have got to be wise to what's going on, and it can change. You know, where we think the Bank of England base rate is going to top out at now is different to what it was a couple of months ago. Yeah. The, you know, how quickly we think inflation is going to get back down to the 2% target has been changed from just a couple of months ago. These things are changing. Yes, okay, we can look at 2023 and say, in the property market, these are where the opportunities are. In this is where the opportunities are. Yeah, but it could change. It could change at any time. And I think you just need to be really agile. I think that's what it is. And actually, one of my major concerns this year for me and Grand Union is, you know, we only really do one thing, which is we arrange finance for people. Yes, okay, we have maybe a wider spectrum than others do. And I know that a lot of my friends that are residential brokers are struggling maybe more than we are, because a lot of our clients are investors. They're seeing a downturn in property prices as a real positive, because they can go out and they can buy stuff cheaper than they could do 12 months ago. But even so, we are just doing one thing. And I think if COVID taught us anything, it's that you need to pivot. That was like one of the buzzwords, wasn't it? You need to be able to pivot. You need to be able to be agile. And actually, you need to have more strings to your bow. And I think that's what we're sort of looking at now is I'm thinking more of a business from a larger scale business capacity. You know, how can we sort of COVID-proof ourselves again, or economy-proof ourselves? And you know, there's a really good example of this, not anything to do with my business, but there's a guy called James Sinclair that I really enjoy following online. Yeah. And he bought an ice cream business, right?
I know.
And
it's near me.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
He's been on my podcast.
Is it?
Yeah. He's a great guy. He gave me an absolute lesson in how to run a business on that podcast. It was brilliant. got his whiteboard out and everything. It was cracking. It was so good. But he did a video recently. And he says, you know, you've got to look at your product that you're selling, whether it's a service or a physical product. And there will be certain markets where it will work better than others. So he said, right, ice cream. Everyone loves ice cream in the summer. No one likes it in the winter. So he thought, where do people eat ice cream in the winter? He was like, cinemas and theatres. So he went out and tried to actually, you know, work out deals with Everyman Cinema, Odeon, you know, theatres around the West End to sell his ice cream, to actually have deals that they would be, you know, he would be their new supplier. Like, that's so clever. That's how I think business owners need to be thinking in these sort of times. Mm. What could damage my ability to make this business successful and to grow it and to scale it in the way that I want to do it, and try and find ways to plug those gaps? And, you know, this is something that I think about on a daily basis. You know, what other stuff can we do? If you're a property investor, it might be I diversify my portfolio. Do I really just want single lets that at the moment are not really performing all that well? Do I think about, instead of that block of flats that I've just bought, instead of renting them out as single lets, do I rent them out on serviced accommodation where I can potentially make more money? Yes, there's more work involved, but the cash flow will help me scale my business quicker. You know, it's things like that. And I think that that's where the real opportunity is this year. It's like anything, when things are bad, the cream rises to the top. And unfortunately, the people that don't do as well are the ones that will probably A, not take responsibility for their own circumstances. And in turn, what they'll do is they'll just blame the economy. They'll blame the government, you know, and all these other things, which, you know, the government gets stuff wrong. They're only human, you know, at the end of the day. And they won't look at the opportunities and think, I can take control of my own destiny here. I can actually educate myself to find where those gaps are and go and exploit them and bring my business, you know, forward, rather than just going, right, let's ride this out, actually try and grow during that time. And that's what my job is this year, is to keep Grand Union growing, because I don't think of it from my point of view either. I think of it from my staff. I'm like, right, I need Grand Union to get bigger because I need to pay my staff more next year than I'm paying them this year. And if I don't, okay, one of my staff members took a pay cut to come and work with us, which is like the, you know, the biggest compliment you can probably get. But I still want to get her back to what she was getting paid previously. And, you know, that's a big pressure, but it means that you have to be creative. You've got to think outside the box, and you've got to try and grow in a time where most businesses won't. That's really tough.
It is tough. Normally I'd ask, obviously, about your lending and stuff like that, but I want people to reach out to you. Obviously, you've got a Canady link. I'll put it in the description. Because there is so many moving parts, and it depends how much funding you've got available. Mm-hmm. Obviously, your own personal situation and your appetite for risk, in my own personal opinion. Mm. Obviously, me personally, I'm not starting, so I'm going to be looking at different projects. If you're only starting and say you've got 20, 30, 40, 50 grand, you're not going to be looking at, in my opinion, a buy-to-let. It's not the right time for you. So schedule a call with Sam, and then he could advise. On, I don't know if you do it for free or...
I do. So I've got... I have like a one-to-one property sort of strategy call that I do, which is paid for, just purely because we are mega busy at the moment, but I still want to be able to make time for people that are very, very early doors and aren't necessarily ready to become Grand Union clients right this very second, but can do in the future. We are taking on new clients. We're just... I'm not saying we're having to be picky. We're just having to prioritize existing clients and those that really do need our help right now, which is not a great position to be in. You know, I want to be able to be in a position where whenever my phone rings, I can pick it up. But
that's, I mean, just, I don't see that as an issue. But if anyone is interested, they can reach out to myself. Mm-hmm. But if you are looking to get started and take the action, reach out to me, reach out to Sam on Instagram. Obviously, again, everything will be in the description. Take me to your happy place. Where's your happy place?
Happy places watching Saracens win the Premiership title at Twickenham this year. That'll be very happy. Anyone that knows me said I'm a bit obsessed with Saracens, which we've not had the greatest of recent history. I get a little bit too excited when Saracens are playing, especially when they're winning. And when they're losing, I'm just not a good person to be around. I get quite upset. It's just, I cannot help it. I just cannot help it. But that's my...
You don't get angry though, remember?
I don't get angry. What I do is sometimes I'll just say things like, and then instantly go, oh, that was a silly thing to say, wasn't it? And I'll say them a bit too loud. And that's all it is. I'm sure the people that sit around me in the West Stand at the Stone Age Stadium probably wish that they got their seat somewhere else. So I apologise to everyone in my block. But no, that's me from a personal perspective. You know, that's sitting watching a game of rugby with a beer in your hand. You can't get much better than that. From a sort of a work related perspective, I know it sounds really cheesy, but me and the team have a Friday afternoon Zoom call. We're all remote. Everyone's based in different parts of the country, and there is nothing better than the whole point of it is that everyone can chat through problems that we've got with what we're doing, problems with certain cases, and we can all find solutions and have input with each other's issues. And sometimes it's nice just to sit back, like I'll start the conversation off and then just watch them all interacting with each other. It's like I feel like a proud father or something. It's just you just can't beat it. And you know that they're all talking to each other because of you. Like, if I didn't start this business, then they wouldn't all know it. They wouldn't know each other. And they all get on really, really well. And they're there problem solving and doing all this stuff. And like I said, it's like hair on the back of your neck type stuff. It's just so cool. It's so awesome.
And what about the success? What does that mean to you? Like, what does that define success for Sam? What does that mean?
I think success will be that. And this is where I think there's a lot of people that they have their goals and their targets, right? And for me, I have moving goals and targets, because ultimately I'm going to be doing this or some version of this until the day I die. I'm not going to retire. It's when time is up for me to be able to think I'm actually really content with what I've done. That's success. To not have any regrets, to genuinely be able to, it's contentment. Happiness is fleeting. Contentment is the thing that people should be aiming for.
How do you manage contentment with ambition?
That's hard. I think, do you know what? It's and I know that there have been other people that have sort of used a very similar quote to this, but it's loving the game rather than just, you know. If you ask most professional rugby players, footballers, whatever, and they who are retiring, and they're saying, "What was your best, like, memory of playing the sport?" They probably won't tell you about a goal they scored or a trophy they've won. They probably told you about something that funny that happened on the training pitch, or something that happened after a game on the coach on the way back to the training ground or something. So you've got to love the game. You can't just be just purely goal orientated. The goal is there to keep you playing the game, because otherwise without a goal there's no point in the game. So I think you've just the day-to-day, you've got to find something that when you wake up in the morning, it puts a smile on your face. Mm. It's not going to happen with everyone, and I'd tell everyone, I guarantee you that Harry Kane will wake up one morning, he's the England captain, the pinnacle of our nation's sport, and I guarantee you sometimes he wakes up and goes, oh man, I just wish I could watch Netflix today. So it doesn't matter what you do, you're always going to have those days, but if you can more often than not be just really content and happy with your day-to-day life, with what you're doing and what you're building towards, then have patience on a big level, but also be really driven on a smaller level, on a day-to-day level, wanting to get things done, wanting to pursue things and wanting to move that stuff on and improve your team and improve what you're doing. If you can find all of those things, then I think that's true success for me.
And how do you stay driven to the goal? And I think you've alluded to it in some parts throughout the whole podcast, but your definition of success is exactly the same as mine. You've got moving targets.
It's because we're both really clever people, mate.
I would agree. I don't disagree with that at all. But for everyone listening, it's going to be, how do you stay driven? You can't be 100% motivated all the time, and I agree. But if you're in love with the game, like you say, how do you stay motivated?
Do you know what? I think you have to understand that you're not always going to be motivated.
Exactly.
That's the key.
Yeah.
When you're, I gave this advice to one of my team members literally today. I said, what you need to do is you need to figure out during the points of the day when you personally are at your best, and work around those time frames. Only you have your own internal clock of how things ebb and flow throughout the day. There are, I know, I fought for years and years and years, and I only figured it out this year, January. I'm not a morning person. I actually quite like, I like waking up relatively naturally in the morning. Yeah. I like to sit, watch a bit of telly in the morning, have my cereal or whatever, and maybe start work about 9:30. Like, I'm completely okay with that. 100%. And what it was because I've also realized that I'm quite active late at night. Like, my brain is quite focused between the hours of like 9 and 11. So I've decided to work around that and actually figure out my own way of working, which allows me to be to get whatever all the crap I need to do done every single day.
Such an important point.
Yeah,
it really is.
And you shouldn't like hate yourself because of that. If you're, some people just find it quite difficult to stay motivated for long periods of time.
And the reason this is again my opinion, my belief is social media puts such a pressure on people. And you get up at 5 a.m. and obviously I know, like, for example, D, he's not promoting that you've got to get up at 5 a.m. to be successful.
He's just saying that's what I do.
But that's what he does, and not necessarily that's why he is successful.
Yeah, I might make the 11 o'clock club.
But yeah, but I mean, if I was to consistently do that over a period of time, that's not necessarily going to be myself. But
yeah, but do you think you can change, you can create a new habit that goes against your nature, and over time you would break down your own nature and create a new way of doing things?
Yeah. I do. I think only if you're that type of person, because of what we've been through, we've created through training, for example, in rugby, that's the way you've got to train now.
Yeah.
You're beat, you're resisting.
But I suppose it's about whether or not you actually need to.
Exactly.
Because I don't see it as a need. I don't think that my business would do better if I got up at 5 a.m. because I know what will happen.
I understand.
I'll get to about 7 or 8 in the morning and I'll feel knackered.
That's exactly, so you have to know yourself, your body, and go, it's okay not to be okay. And I'll look at it as again, my other question. This is from Dean. It was such a powerful question. Do you think your diary is a true reflection of your self-love? Yeah. Right, that's the amount of time I've got in a day. I'm not going to do a fucking to-do list because it's literally going to be so much stress. I'm going to go, right, there's my allocated time. And that's how I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to get up. And then I'm going to do these. And move it. And D's analogy of it, he's got a column A, a column B, and a column C. If I don't get column A, then I'm moving it to column B. Or I'm going to sign it. That's the way I've always done it before. I never used it. It was like, I have to get these things done. And if they don't, shit, I'm going to stop until I get them done.
Yeah. And it's hard because I think when you are driven, when you see a to-do list, and I'm awful for to-do lists. I have more to-do lists. I have a to-do list for my to-do lists. You know, it's just, it's bad. And you can get into a really, really bad habit with it. And you need to actually work that out of your system, because I think you're absolutely right. Forgiving yourself for not being Superman is okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I do sometimes look at my to-do list and I go, there's no one in the universe that could do this. Yeah. And I'm and sometimes as well, I set myself up badly. I'll actually sometimes my worst trait is I don't manage my clients' expectations. I'm sure my clients know that I'm busy. I'm sure they do, but they still only see themselves and me. That's all they're seeing, or me or the team. They don't see the fact that in that same day, the job I'm allocating to do for them, I've also got to replicate about 20 times potentially if I've stupidly mismanaged my to-do list. What I've done there, now my team tell me off all the time, is I've gone back to all those 10 and gone, yeah, I'll get this done for you by tomorrow. It's not going to happen, is it? So it's about, you've got to de-stress your day by forgiving yourself for not because the thing is, you do that, but you've got to then back it up with another day like that to feel almost like you continue that accomplishment. Whereas actually what I've started to do now is, my mum's my PA, which is really useful. And she is actually she's a professional PA. Like some people are like, your mum's your PA. But no, she is a professional PA. If she wasn't my mum, I couldn't afford her. But what we've started doing now is, at the beginning of the week, I will say, right, mum, here are all the things that, because they're not like day-to-day tasks, keep getting pushed back. I need you to go and just allocate them into my diary throughout this week for me, so that these things need to get done this week, and these things need to be done very latest by the end of next week. Mm-hmm. Can you just manage that diary for me for the next 2 weeks? And she's amazing at it, because that's what she does for a living. And that's mega, mega helpful as well, is to actually allocate, make sure that you can look at tasks and not everything needs to get done that same day. You need to know which ones do.
So I'm exactly the same. I'll have three things. Normally it's a lot more than three things, but out of the massive to-do list that I have got, there's three things. They have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Get that done. Everything else that's on there, we'll move it across.
And also, do you know the relief as well? When you look, if say you've got a to-do list of like 27 things, and you just go, I'm actually going to delegate some of those things out, which a lot of people actually probably have difficulties doing. I don't have as much of a difficulty doing that because I'm lazy, obviously.
I'm the same.
So I'd rather someone else do it, you know? But then if whatever remains, to actually be able to go back to all those people that you know you're not going to get back to today, or those tasks you're not going to get done, and manage the expectations of people, this is not going to get done within the next 24 hours. I'm going to see if I can do it by end of play tomorrow, but it might go into the next day. You've relieved yourself all of that, and then you can just focus and do a really good job of those top 2, 3, 4 things that you've put on that list. It's so important. Yeah,
I call it smart.
It is smart, but it's so difficult to do. It's difficult not to like understate it. It's really hard.
What's the plan for the next 5 years?
Help as many people as I possibly can. Have the brokerage that I have in my head, which is one that wins on service, knowledge, marketing, education. Mm-hmm. You know, winning those awards, because there is no other choice than there has to be us.
So you're not going to get your mum to run a show in different names and then nominate you then?
No, but do you know what? But do you know the stupidest thing is, though? That's actually and that's how brokers get nominated for these things. They'll just have a PA that will just go and nominate them for all these things, and that's how they get nominated. Okay, they don't not always win them, but whenever I see a nomination for something, they're like, oh, I'm really happy. I mean, look, I've done it. Oh, we got nominated for this. This is great. You know, I'm like, yeah, cool, because I'm happy about it. But it's probably a lot of the time it's because someone random has just nominated me for it. Again, it comes back to what we were saying previously about having moving targets actually is not necessarily a bad thing. And when I'm thinking of all the things I want to get done in 5 years, I'm like, yeah, but I want to get them done this year, but you can't. I want to build out our marketing department. By the time 5 years rolls around, I'd like our marketing department to be industry leading. I want us to be creating the funnest content that any brokerage creates. That's a real massive ambition for me, is to actually bring financial education to the masses through Grand Union and through our marketing team. You know, whenever I do marketing now, it's all fun. It's all, you know, it's all educational. There's no sales in it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I want to just make that even bigger. So that's a massive thing for me, potentially, to even get to a point where, and actually it's not potentially, it's part of my ambition, is I'd like to have that as a separate marketing entity on its own, building out like what I've learned in terms of how I've marketed Grand Union and myself so far, really build that into a team that is doing something really cool and different to the rest of the market as well. I need to start building my asset base as an individual and through the company structure as well. So that's a big thing for the next 5 years, is to actually start putting my money where my mouth is and you know, reinvesting into property as well, as well as other assets, growing out Grand Union, giving the opportunity for our staff members to start their own businesses as well. That's one thing that whenever brokers come to me, I always say, is your ambition to start your own brokerage one day? And if they say yes, I say, great, let's do it. I'll help you. Come on board with me. And
I think that's really important.
You know, I'll help you. You'll have our structure, our marketing, you know, everything that I know how to do will be available to you.
What's the best piece of advice you remember receiving?
The outcome of any given circumstances is down to how you react.
Who's that from?
That was from that same sales manager from ages ago.
Really?
Yeah. She gave me the equation: event plus reaction equals outcome. And I think what that does is my one of my biggest bugbears is people not taking responsibility for themselves and just have it. I hate blame culture, hate it. And I think that if people can live by that formula, look, if you have a car crash, you can't change it. If your business takes a massive tumble, if the economy changes, if the government makes a stupid decision, like ultimately you don't have any control over those events. But your reaction to them has a massive impact on the outcome, and how you react will either have a positive or a negative impact on it. That's the best advice I've ever given, and that's the advice I'd give to anyone. Take responsibility for your own actions.
I completely agree with that, mate. What's one thing that you know that others may not?
Oh, I'm sure there's loads of stuff and I can't think of any now. It's probably some sort of stupid, like, something about, I don't know, Saracens, or I also support Barnet Football Club, who are like one of the worst teams in the whole of the UK. So it's probably something to do with that. People do know this. Richard Ashcroft bought me my first pint.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's like my little.
Well, I didn't know that.
There you go,
mate.
Yeah.
And again, what for you is a life well lived?
Do you know, it's difficult. Because I mean, I've just recently gone through a separation with my wife. So if you'd asked me this question probably 4 months ago, my answer would be completely different, because it would have been to have made her happy and to build a family and do all that kind of stuff. Now that that's not there, my opportunities are completely endless at the moment, because I've got a brand new life to start living. So right now, I don't know the answer to that question, genuinely, just because of the time in my life that you've asked it.
Episode 2 pending.
Probably episode like 4.
Mm.
Yeah, I've lived a few different lives.
And always I'll ask this question at the end. So Sam, how are you doing?
Good enough.
Enough?
Good enough, yeah. I'm a very driven person. So I'm very okay with the fact that I may never be truly satisfied. But at the moment, good enough. And good enough is good enough. I'm always a big believer in that.
Wicked. Sam, thanks very much for coming on, mate. I appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure, buddy.
Thank you very much.